This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have you been to LAX recently? Yeah, there's a good chance you've noticed things are a little busier at the old airport. Baggage claims are full of suitcases. There's traffic again on the horseshoe, lots of traffic. And the shuttle to the LA exit lot, where you can grab a ride into town, is packed. But if you're trying to get a ride out of the airport, there's a problem. There aren't enough Uber or Lyft drivers to meet all the demand.
You arrive to LA, you hope you're going to get something, no good experience, and you're waiting in the cold. The sun is coming down right now, 45 minutes so far.
We've been waiting for like 30 to 35 minutes for a Lyft. And then Uber, they're charging $65 just to get 5 miles.
I feel like this is just a new normal for rideshare. Yes. I mean, I can deal with waiting a little bit, but not too much longer when we're already going on 30 minutes at this point.
So why can't Tom Napora, Katrina Green, and Lindsay Johnson catch a ride like they used to? It's been going on like this for weeks, and KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb covers the business of Southern California. Has some answers. Hey, Benjamin.
Hello, Steve.
I've been in this situation, as probably you have, and a lot of other Angelenos who are at the LA exit trying to get an Uber or Lyft. So what's going on here? Why is it taking so long?
Yeah, Steve, there's a couple things that are happening right now. For one, the numbers show the airport traffic is just way up. I mean, data from LA World Airports, which manages LAX, shows that the number of travelers that are passing through the airport in April, it was actually double what it was just 2 months earlier in February of this year. Now it's June. We don't have the data for this month yet, but you can see kind of how busier things have become. And Steve, there's simply just not enough drivers on the roads in their cars doing pickups right now. Some have turned to delivery during the pandemic, and others just simply aren't working.
I mean, why though? I mean, if demand has returned and people are hungry for rides, right? Why is the supply diminished?
It's a really good question. And to try and answer that, I connected with a group called Rideshare Drivers United. This is an independent association of drivers that was founded here in Los Angeles. You might recall, Steve, this group did a lot of organizing against Proposition 22, which passed last November. This is the proposition that allows companies like Uber and Lyft to classify their drivers as independent contractors and not employees. Anyway, since that law passed, working conditions have really gotten worse for these rideshare drivers. I mean, many have told me stories of barely being able to eke out a living prior to the pandemic. Then COVID hits and they've left the business altogether. They simply couldn't make it work. And that includes a gentleman named Daniel Russell, who was a full-time rideshare driver for about 4 years.
I tried to keep it going into the pandemic. I had family that was very worried about my safety. And I was making about $3 an hour at the beginning of the pandemic. It was ridiculous. There was no way to even, you know, I thought that I could scrape together enough to get by. And I didn't want to go on unemployment. But eventually I just had to, because there was nowhere near enough business to sustain. And it was dangerous.
Not enough business as in people who wanted to take a ride, and dangerous as in the risk of catching COVID-19, Russell says. It was high in his mind. Now, he doesn't plan to return to the industry looking ahead, and he's not alone. Stephanie St. Just used to drive an Uber XL and now is working with the drivers union. And she says a major reason why she and other drivers just aren't back yet is because of a change in pricing.
When I started, I was getting paid $1.20 per mile. And now you're making 32 cents. It doesn't make sense. And not only that, but it's humiliating that they're telling you that you're not worth anything.
Steve, there's been a change in the overall price per mile that some drivers make, but also in some locations like LAX, companies like Uber have done away with what's called premium pricing. You see, before, when you drove to LAX as a driver, you could make sometimes 2, maybe 3 times the normal rate for a ride. And that was a big deal for drivers. The drivers say Uber and Lyft have cut those bonuses. And so folks like Ben Valdez say the trip to the airport just doesn't make any financial sense anymore for him. He's actually moved exclusively now to food delivery.
It's not so much how much you earn, it's how much more time you have to put into it. So I usually have a set amount of money I want to make, And if I had to quantify it in how much more time that I had to put into it, it was about double.
So instead of driving 5 days a week to make the money he needs, he can do that, he says, in about 3 days a week now, just driving delivery.
Benjamin, if Uber and Lyft are slow and pricey, is this a great time to go back to hailing a cab, a taxi cab?
Well, that's what a lot of people are actually doing, whether it's because of high prices or because of the long wait times. That includes folks like John Nichols, who tried to call an Uber recently at LAX.
The rideshare is ridiculous now. You know what I mean? The taxi was made much more sense. I would have done damn near anything before I paid $80. $80. I literally told my wife that you would see me like a Compton cowboy on a horse riding down Sepulveda before I pay $80 for a 7-8 minute ride. That's ridiculous.
And there are tons of cabs that are waiting at the airport too. I mean, the line at LA exit for the cabs when I was there recently was a couple dozen cars deep. You know, I actually felt bad for a couple that I interviewed about their experience. Lindsay Johnson was waiting for a Lyft with her partner, Joshua Whitten. And I told them, you know, if you're still here by the time I'm done doing my interviews, I'm going to take you home myself. Turns out they were. I ended up driving them home in my Ford Escape back to Brentwood. And it's just become really frustrating, Steve, for folks who are waiting for a ride trying to get out of the airport.
Did they pay you any money, Benjamin? No, never mind. We're not going to go there. Anyway, so other than your brief foray as a cab driver, I mean, this lack of rideshare supply has to be a big boon for cabbies, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly not upset about it after a decade or so of having their lunch stolen by Uber and Lyft. But I caught up with Leon Slumovich, the president of the Taxi Workers Association of Los Angeles. He confirmed, yes, cabbies have seen an uptick in business because of the problems with Uber and Lyft at the airport. But actually, it's really modest. I mean, picture it's like a stock you bought that's been tanking for year after year after year, and it has one good week. So what, right?
I'm not sure the industry can survive because you simply can't compete with companies that is able to subsidize trips and lose billions of dollars a year to gain market share.
Which is what Uber, for example, has been doing for years, right? Grabbing market share, changing expectations. I mean, I saw people who would rather wait an hour at LAX than hop in a cab at the airport. Cabs typically can be more expensive, but that is leveling out. So we are seeing some behavior start to change.
What are Uber and Lyft doing, Benjamin, to better compensate the drivers and I don't know, try and get more drivers back?
Yeah, so I reached out to both companies and asked them those very questions. Uber failed to respond to a number of my requests, but Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi took to Twitter recently in a response to a Washington Post article that was about this very same issue. And he wrote, quote, "Yes, you are probably paying more for rides, but drivers are getting a higher cut of the fare hike," end quote. Although I got to tell you, Steve, that's not what drivers like Ben Valdez have been telling me. Lyft also declined a recorded interview, but a spokesperson sent me a few responses and said, quote, "The company has added thousands of drivers in the past few weeks, and it's already leading to a better rider experience with wait times down more than 15% nationwide."
Is there a potential long-term impact, though, do you think? Or is this just a product of the pandemic? Things are, you know, I guess just coming out of the pandemic, things are just trying to level off.
Yeah, I think there is. I think there could potentially be a long-term impact here. I mean, many of the former rideshare drivers I spoke to who left the industry during the pandemic, they have no plans of coming back at all. I mean, they've told stories and we've reported them on KCRW in the past years of living in their cars, renting vehicles, and having to drive Uber or Lyft just to pay for the fees, increasing gas prices. So the expenses are there. There could really be a supply issue moving forward unless things change. Maybe you won't notice it as much in your neighborhood, but I think you're certainly going to notice it at the airport.
In the meantime, Benjamin, I've got your number. If you're taking rides from the airport, by the way.
Listen, I take payment in a dinner or maybe a beer, but that's about it.
I'll Venmo you. How about that? KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb. Benjamin, thanks.
Anytime, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Pop princess Britney Spears is expected to speak before a judge at LA County Probate Court tomorrow for the first time in her 13-year conservatorship. She'll likely appear via Zoom, but that's not going to stop her fans from swarming the Stanley Mosque Courthouse in support. Now, Britney's life has been controlled by her father and a cast of lawyers ever since a very public mental health crisis back in 2008. You remember the shaving of the head. Other things happened around that time. And tomorrow, her followers hope to hear her side of the story. Rex Weiner is an investigative reporter and contributing writer for Los Angeles Magazine. He's been writing about Britney for some time now. Rex, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
Why is she speaking in front of the court? She's been obviously under this conservatorship for a long time now. What's the matter before the court right now?
It's expected that Britney Spears will be requesting that her father, Jamie Spears, who's been directing her business affairs for all of this time, be removed from the conservatorship, where he is partnered with Bessemer Trust, a financial management firm.
For those who haven't been following all the headlines, and the there's actually a hashtag, Free Britney, on social media, describe what this conservatorship is.
In California, the state of California, a conservatorship is the court-ordered situation where someone, due to some mental or physical infirmity, is now a ward of the court, a ward of the state, and their financial lives and their personal lives and their medical lives are controlled by people appointed by the probate court.
So if Britney Spears were to release an album, what would happen? She has no control over it. Is she able to release an album?
Only through the permission of her handlers, of her court-appointed financial arbiters, and her medical guardians. And she's 39 years old. She's the mother of two. In the time that she's been in this conservatorship, she's released four albums and done four world tours. So she's fully able to do whatever she wants creatively, but how she puts that out there commercially is a whole other question.
Talk to me a little bit about this hashtag Free Britney and this movement that continues to grow. What is this group and what is their mission? Because we're talking about a lot of people who are behind this.
Well, Steve, Britney Spears is probably one of the most famous celebrities in the world. Her Instagram has 30 million followers, and all over the world, her fans, many of whom got to know her when they were just kids, are very passionate about their idol and her talent and her creativity. Most of these fans now are in their 30s. They have serious jobs, and they've been questioning the business foundation, the justice, the injustice of her situation. And so they've found one another on social media under the hashtag Free Britney. And they've been organized to demonstrate at the court, to protest what they see as an unjust and perhaps illegal situation.
This is something where Britney Spears is not alone. There are others, many Californians, thousands perhaps, in the custody of what are called court-appointed guardians. These are the conservatorships that we're talking about, what Britney is under as well. And you call it one of the most serious issues facing the country. What do you mean by that?
In California, it's called a conservatorship, but in the rest of the country, Steve, it's called a legal guardianship. And basically, if you fall into one of these situations, it's very difficult to extricate yourself. And if a family member should fall in under this arrangement. It's difficult to often to see them. Often their estates are depleted by, you know, fiduciaries appointed by the court who are in it for a buck. And it's a very difficult situation, especially because the largest transfer of wealth in the history of this country is happening right now. The baby boomers are passing along whatever assets they've gained over a lifetime to the next generation. And if the next generation doesn't know what they're doing and comes into contact with this legal guardianship, they may find that the inheritance that they assumed they were going to have has been depleted by predatory personnel connected with the probate courts.
But Britney Spears didn't inherit this money. She made this money from a solo singing career. So she's got all this money that her father has control of. And I guess, you know, she's 39 years old. She's apparently vacationing on Maui. There's this hashtag social media movement. She's got millions of followers on social media. How does she not have control of her? I mean, like, how does a court-appointed guardian or a conservatorship, as it is here in California, how does that stop her from, I mean, does she have to go to her father for money? How does she even live?
Yes, her father has been in complete control over her finances for all of this time. The state, though, monitors this, and every nickel that's spent, that she spends, is a matter of public record. You can go to the courts and access the files on Britney Spears' conservatorship, and you can see how many times she went to Target last year. So theoretically, she's protected, and she does, you know, very well. She's certainly she's worth $60 million, and she's not lacking for anything.
Not lacking for anything, but again, she's going before the court to try and have her father removed from this conservatorship. I mean, you say she's doing okay. She says she's doing okay on Instagram to her millions of fans. I mean, so is this just about replacing dad with somebody else? Or, you know, I mean, does she want control of her own fiduciary interests?
Well, she's had some personal conflicts with her father, so we don't know if he's the only problem in the situation. But we do know this, Steve, that Britney Spears is the most famous person in the entire world who has not been interviewed in person by a journalist in more than a decade. So we don't know what it is she wants. In fact, we won't have confirmation until the Zoom, which will be public record, that she even exists. So, you know, there are all sorts of conspiracy theories that the fans have about, you know, who controls her communications and so on. But the fact is, we won't know until tomorrow what she has to say about her situation.
We're all waiting with bated breath and ears. Rex Weiner, investigative reporter, contributing writer for Los Angeles Magazine. Rex, we're all going to stay tuned. Thanks for the update.
Thank you. Free Britney. Bye-bye.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Here's a question for you. What do George Clooney, Don Cheadle, Eva Longoria, Dr. Dre, and Jimmy Iovine have in common? No, they're not in some movie or music video together. In addition to being pretty famous people, they are also involved with starting public high schools in Los Angeles. It's not a late-in-life career move. It's more like future of entertainment business move. A need, they say, to diversify the pipeline of workers in their industries. Jill Cowan is California Today correspondent for the New York Times. She's reporting on this story, and she's with us now. Hey, Jill.
Hi, Steve.
So tell us about how George Clooney got started with the idea of launching a public high school. Why was that in his head?
Sure. So, you know, and I'll say, first of all, that it was my colleague, Sean Hubler, who is wonderful, who got to talk to him via Zoom. Essentially, you know, he was having conversations with, you know, people he worked with, his colleagues, and they were coming to similar conclusions, which is to say that there wasn't a really good pipeline of people who know how to do these really specialized jobs in Hollywood, what they call below the line crew work, things like that. And also, they weren't very diverse, the people that they were seeing coming into those roles. So he was talking with Eric Fellner, the co-chairman of Working Title Films, who told him about a similar thing that he did in London in 2018 to address the same problem, essentially, in the British film industry. And within 11 days, they went from sort of having this idea and having these conversations to essentially launching this idea or announcing this idea. And they credited that in large part to Austin Buettner, who is the high profile, extremely wealthy, deeply embedded in sort of the LA philanthropic and civic community, and, you know, credited him with helping get this idea just rolling really quickly in an institution or a system that is not known for moving quickly.
Buettner, also the outgoing LA USD superintendent.
That is correct. That's part of why I think you're seeing some of these partnerships getting announced right now. You know, as he's preparing to leave, they wanted to get, I assume, you know, sort of things locked down.
So when we talk about the people who are, and I mentioned other folks as well, not just George Clooney, but,
sure,
you know, Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre, they have a music production school, I think, within USC,
right,
but they're also doing other things in the music industry when it comes to high school. And I wonder, you know, when people say, all right, all these folks are in the entertainment industry, they have a lot of money, they're helping schools. That's great, right? But critics aren't so sure about that.
Sure. So there's some ambivalence. I mean, I think that nobody is questioning the motives of some of these high profile folks, in particular, you know, I mean, George Clooney and that group, but also, you know, Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine have been in the community in Los Angeles and have, you know, great expertise in their industry and the way that entrepreneurship works today. And so I think nobody's questioning, and I think that everybody would be clear, they're not criticizing Dr. Dre or Jimmy Iovine or George Clooney, for that matter. Nobody's coming for any of them. But at the same time, I think that there is a certain amount of concern that once public education, specifically K through 12, becomes less fashionable to invest in, you know, or simply that these high profile benefactors lose interest, you know, that's going to leave some of these public schools out of luck. At the same time, it also builds in a certain amount of inequality, as Sarah Reckhow, a scholar at Michigan State University, sort of explained it. It's just, this is what we've accepted in American education, which is, you know, schools, public school systems require private investment or in order to adequately and effectively educate children. And I think that then lends itself to inequality. There's, you know, there's only so many schools that are geographically proximate to Hollywood, for example. You know, she mentioned to me when we were speaking, you know, what about the Santa Ana School District? What about some of the other large urban districts across California where, you know, they may not have access or as, you know, industry benefactors may not have a reason to invest in quite the same way.
Well, and it seems a bit arbitrary, too, right? Like, you know, it's like throwing a dart at something.
Right. And I think that there's kind of two ways that you could look at this, right? There's the economic development perspective, in which case investing in Los Angeles local schools to benefit one of the region's, you know, biggest, highest profile, most unique industries makes a lot of sense. And you've seen this in a lot of other places. There's a lot of discussion about investing in public education as a kind of workforce initiative. And so you have that. But at the same time, it is sort of, you know, it depends on what industry is in a given area. So if you're thinking the Central Valley or the Inland Empire, some of these educational programs may not be, you know, they may be a little bit different, or they may be for different industries. And so it's sort of a luck of the draw, which again, bakes inequality into the system.
Jill Cowan, California Today correspondent for the New York Times. Jill, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, off to the Venice Boardwalk. where the number of unhoused people has expanded in recent years by a lot. And now L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva has promised to clear the boardwalk of homeless folks by July 4th. But where will they go? And how the boardwalk has become a flashpoint in L.A.'s debate on how to handle the homelessness crisis. That's tomorrow. Catch us online anytime, anytime. KCRW.com/GreaterLA. Tell us what's on your mind. Share a story with us. Or you can let us share stories with you by subscribing to the podcast. KCRW.com/GreaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, and Christian Bordahl all had hands in this evening's show. Thank you for your ears and your time tonight. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.